The GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First Five GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. I'm really pleased this morning to be joined by Maria Mastrantonio, who is an clinical advisor to NHS England regional team in the South West. So over to you, Maria. Can you tell us exactly what your clinical advisor role involves?
So my clinical advisor role sits within the performance team. We are the team that look at doctors' performance, basically. I'm in a subset of that, where actually I deal with complaints from primary care. Patients can complain to NHS England, and if it is deemed that we need to look at what happened from the notes point of view, then we will have a clinical review. And those doctors who do those clinical reviews in the Southwest, it's slightly different in different regions, but in the Southwest, we have a body of GPs who will undertake those clinical reviews and then be able to tell the patient what happened, why it happened, and answer their questions in effect. And I head up that team, but I sit underneath the performers. Area of NHS England, and there are other clinical review clinical advisors, but obviously their jobs will be slightly different to mine.
You're talking about when patients complain specifically to NHS England rather than things being escalated having complained to their practice, is that right?
As it stands at the moment, patients can make a complaint to, well, actually, it's changed now, but it's now their ICB, but it was NHS England, and they are asked if they would like to obviously complain to the practice, and then they can make a decision. They don't tend to sort of, complain to practice and then it gets escalated to our teams in the ICB at the moment.
So where does that fit in your week? How much work, I suppose, does that generate? How many clinical views do you end up doing?
There's about 300, I think, clinical reviews a year in our area, or complaints that need clinical reviews in our area. We had a steep increase when actually we did move from it was devolved from NHSE to the ICBs. But at the moment, we're still sitting in NHS England. The reviewers sit there. Between myself and the other reviewers, we obviously do a complaint. Mostly it takes a day. It can take a session. It just depends on the complaint and how complicated it is. And also, I then oversee the clinical reviewers and offer them sort of quality assurance. I do the inductions, and we have an appraisal. They all have an appraisal every year. So that's the sort of other thing that I do. And if the complaints team, who are not clinical, are in two minds as to whether we do need a review, then they will come to me and I will say, yes, this needs a review or not, and review the documentation that goes with that.
And what sort of outcomes do you get from reviews? So say you've spent a whole day doing a clinical review and discussion amongst yourself about what you think of the complaint. What happens next?
Depending on the decision, it's either upheld, not upheld, or partially upheld. And so we will then make a judgment on that. That's fine. If we feel in that review that obviously the care hasn't been quite what would be acceptable for general practice at the moment, because I tend to just look at general practice complaints. There are dental and optometrist ones, but I don't deal with those. If any of us feel that the care hasn't been quite what we would expect, then we would escalate that to the performance team and ask them to review. A lot of them, they look at it and they say, no, this is fine. And occasionally they will take that on to investigate further what needs to be done next.
That's really interesting. I suppose you learn about in training, don't you, different procedures for complaints, but I've never really thought about exactly what happens when it gets to NHS England level and how that gets worked out. Is there support for the GPs involved if it gets escalated to the performance team and stuff? Has NHS England got provision to support the GPs being involved in the complaint?
GPs that are, as you say, involved in a complaint, then they are offered support and they will also have a discussion with a clinical advisor. So either myself or one of the other clinical advisors who sit in the team. So they are supported through that. They're not just sort of sent, a letter or something. You think, program managers are excellent for their support as well, and signpost to other organisations that can help them. So we are there to support doctors. Yeah,
that's really interesting. So I suppose you cross the boundary between sort of supporting the patient and making sure that their care is as it should be and making a decision on that, but also doing the pastoral support bit to the doctors involved. So that must be a really interesting role. So you said, these kind of things can take a session or a whole day, and then you talked about 300. So how does how does that work in how do you divide your time up with that?
The doctors are, sort of employed just on not on a sessional basis, on a review basis, if that makes sense. Probably 0 hours is probably nearest. And they can do as many or as little as they want to during the year. We always have a minimum number just to keep the skill set. And as long as they fulfil that minimum number, then, they can, they will be allocated. We have a system of allocation, so they will then be allocated a review. If they can't do it, for example, it's half term, or the summer holidays sometimes can be tricky for those who have children at school and things, then they won't take one. And there are others in the team whose family commitments are slightly different, and they can take more. So, you could do 20, 40 of those, or you could do 8. It really is quite flexible around, what other things that you're doing and what other commitments you have.
Clearly, you're a real expert in this area. I'm really interested in how your career journey took you to being, the regional lead for reviewing all of these sort of high level complaints and sorting them all out and supporting all the people who are reviewing all 300 of them. So how did you get into it?
How I got into this is I became an appraiser to start with. I've subsequently become a senior appraiser, but I'm an appraiser first and foremost. And literally, there was an email that went out a few years ago. This was pre-pandemic, so sort of 2016, I think it was, so quite nearly 10 years ago, actually. And in the email, it said, we need basically clinical reviewers. Would you be interested? And it went out to all the appraisers. So we went, oh, okay. So I went, well, why not? So I said, yes, why not? So I became a clinical reviewer to start with, and I did that for a few years. And then this lead post came up. And so obviously I applied for it and I got it, which was amazing. And then since then, because there never was a lead before, I've made the job my own, I would say, and we have a QA system and things that I've organised, and that's been recognised nationally, and it's great, and I've got wonderful colleagues, and I absolutely adore it. It literally was a chance email that I saw that I thought, oh, I'll do that.
I think that's really salient advice. You're not the first one who said, oh, and an email landed in my inbox. Yeah. And it's difficult, isn't it, as a GP? You get so many emails about so many things and so many bulletins that have got opportunities in them. And I don't know about you, I go through phases where some of the time I sort of click, I haven't got the headspace for this, quick scan and delete. But actually, if you keep your eyes and ears open, these sort of opportunities do come up.
Absolutely.
So that's interesting. So you started as an appraiser and clearly in a sort of pastoral role and review role, and then went from there. Coming into the role as a clinical reviewer, did you have specific experience around complaints, or do you think if you went into that role, you'd need kind of experience with that before?
No, I didn't particularly. I mean, so in my practice, my practice manager would, if we ever had a complaint, we would have to deal with them. We didn't have a complaints team or a complaints team as you now lots of practices do have. So I guess I had experience of responding to my own complaints, if that makes sense. I think if you are looking to get into this sort of space, then anything that you can do within practice, I would now say to somebody, actually, if you get involved in complaints within the practice, in your complaints team, that would be a really good sort of stepping stone, and you can start to see what complaints come through. how the medical defence organisations would suggest that you answer these things. And that's really helpful that if you then went, you know, want to move into this sort of arena, that would be, you know, that'd be really helpful.
And I'm sort of presuming, because obviously you're a regional team down in the Southwest, that there's a similar sort of system to your knowledge in other areas. Presumably, so, most regional teams need a clinical review and complaints process.
We are a little bit different in the Southwest because in other parts of the country, the clinical advisors would do all the clinical reviews as well as their normal investigative processes as well. So we are a little bit different where we have non-clinical advisors doing the clinical reviews, if that makes sense. But in other regions, yes, if you become a clinical advisor, then you will be also doing clinical reviews as well.
And you talked about a really helpful thing to start off is you know, getting involved in the complaints process in your own practice. If people are keen to get involved in clinical advisorship in NHS England, in the performance team in general, are there any other sort of skills that you think that you've gained along the way that are really important, or experiences that would be really useful if you're heading into that sort of not performance review, but review process and leadership roles? Yeah.
I think one of the things to look at is how you can support your colleagues, because obviously part of our role is also supportive. So knowing, so becoming an appraiser, for instance, if you're working, for example, I don't know, in secondary care, you can use those skills, to support your fellow doctors, because that's something certainly that we all have done, and quite a few of us. It's not exclusive, but it just happens that a lot of us are actually appraisers. Yeah, any leadership roles that you can have, either within the practice or outside the practice, that can always help. As I say, there isn't a very specific, you must do this diploma and that and that and that to become an advisor. It's really difficult to say to somebody how you would do it. I would network. I'd find out in your own region who the clinical advisors are. It's not that we're hidden anywhere, so you can find them, and maybe ask them for a mentorship, maybe ask them how they got into it in your region, because it's slightly different between regions. Mm. so those would be my sort of pointers. But basically anything that you can do is always, I think, is always good experience in these roles that you can that you can have. And I worked with a wonderful doctor. His name is Tony. I won't say anything more, but Tony, and he always said to me, "Just say yes." And that would be my piece of advice. When something comes up, just say yes. Doesn't matter if you can't do it or you think you can't do it. Just say yes. Just do it, because actually, then you build up a body of experience, and it's that will help you, move on and push into these sort of roles.
And you mentioned something there around sort of finding out who's doing it in your own area, which is really, really sensible advice in terms of the regional team side of stuff. This may sound like a really silly question, but, how would you go finding out who the clinical advisors are and I suppose how many of them there are, or how to approach them? Because I'm quite lucky. I had a fellowship where I worked at NHS England headquarters for a year. And I was amazed at how few clinical people there are on the ground actually in the building at any one time. And I've always sort of thought the same about regional teams, or assumed the same, is that where are the clinicians, what are they doing, and
where do they hide?
How do you find out what they're up to? So I mean, it seems like the website would be an obvious place, but again, I'm interested in your views on how you find people doing interesting stuff in NHS England.
I think the website can help. So my name, I don't think my name's on the website per se as a clinical advisor, but there are program managers who are wonderful people, to be fair, and do a huge amount of work. But they will also be able to signpost you. So that will probably be the first sort of port of call, and each regional office on the website should have the people to, program managers. If you sort of Google that, then you'll get all sorts of different departments. So that'd be where you would find out. Now, obviously, word of mouth, ask around. You just do you know anyone who's working for NHS England, or the ICB? Obviously, I mean, similar, in as much as word of mouth. Oh yes, X is working there or working there. maybe, you know, send them an email and say, well, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, in your role. Can you tell me more? And, you know, and go from there. So, yeah, so those will be the yes, because it's difficult to find out otherwise.
No, I think that's really helpful advice, actually, because I think it's very daunting, isn't it? You think, oh, well, there'll be a list of clinicians and exactly what they do and how to get in touch with them. And I think we feel very comfortable speaking to other GPs a lot of the time, if slightly daunted by their seniority. But I think it's difficult when you go on a website and you think, oh, actually, these are quite generic emails, or what even is a program manager? But actually knowing that, you know, there's no harm in approaching them out of the blue and saying, I'm really interested to speak to one of the clinicians that you work with in this team. I mean, have you got a contact detail or someone who might be willing to be contacted? And, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? They're going to turn around and say, you know, there's no one in our team, but I'll give you the contact for somebody else. Did you have any specific training or qualifications around complaints? You said you hadn't, you know, specifically been in charge of complaints before, but in that role where you're clearly reviewing other people's work, did you have any specific training around that?
Not when I started, no. I mean, just going back to every experience, you know, whatever experience you have helps. So I actually come from a more educational background. So I've got an MSc in clinical education. I was a program director. You know, I've done all sorts of different things, mostly in education. But actually, when it comes to clinical reviews, that's been really helpful because you're looking at it again, I guess, well, I am, as a more supportive. It's like, you know, did you do this right or wrong? No, well, hang on a minute, you know, is there a learning need here? Do we need to perhaps see whether it's a more systemic in the practice issue, and if the practice needs to perhaps, you know, have a learning event surrounding this thing? So that's kind of where I've come from. You don't have to, you know, go down the education route to do what I do, and not all the clinical reviewers, you know, or any of them necessarily have gone down that route. But again, you know, you bring to these roles the experiences that you have. So, yeah, so I wouldn't say there's anything specific that I that I was sort of trained in that helped. That does help me, you know, on a day-to-day basis when you're making these, when you're looking at the reviews.
And I suppose in the spirit of sort of what one thing helping another, I'm interested in how you feel your role as a clinical advisor enhances your GP role. Does it work in converse?
Yes, it's huge. So one of the easy and straightforward things is that you kind of get to know what people complain about. And that's not to say that, you know, you would necessarily change what you do. But, you know, if you go to a different practice and they do something, I don't know quite what or whatever, and you're going, you've seen a lot of complaints about said thing, you can say, look, you know, actually people do complain about this, you know, and, you know, is there any way that we can make this better? Not that you don't want people to complain, but you just want people to have a better experience, you know, patients to have a better experience. And there are certain medical things that come up again and again, and so you have that most in your mind when you're consulting. So yeah, so it certainly does. I think it certainly has improved my clinical work, you know, hugely. It's a bit like, again, my appraisal work. When you talk to doctors in their appraisal and they say, well, I've learned about this. You go, oh, have you? Oh, tell me a bit more about that, you know, and then I learn. And it's the same with, you know, with the complaints work. I you know, I learn something from any of my complaints, because I've got to look at the NICE guidance. I've got to, you know, look at their local guidance just to see whether that they've followed it or not. And you always learn, you know, if you read a guidance, you're always going to take something back to your own clinical work through that. So yeah, so no, it's brilliant.
Oh, that's great to hear, a sort of positivity of coming out of that role. It's worth thinking about it, isn't it? You have the knowledge of what people complain about. It's improved your practice. And I really like what you said there, that, you know, you always get something from guidance, because you sort of think, oh, PDP's in appraisal, and as a trainee, you think, oh, well, you know, I'll go away and then read the NICE guidance. And even though some of it is a bit dry, but actually you always take tidbits away. So that's real positivity there around your role. Are there any downsides for you of being a clinical advisor to NHS England?
I think as soon as you go into the portfolio land, if you see what I mean, at times it can be that you've got a lot on and then sort of finessing that and then juggling your clinical work. And I sort of do mentoring and coaching as well. So, you know, juggling all of that at times can be quite tricky. So it's more a time thing than actually something in the job itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I'm sure there's lots of people sat there thinking, oh, you know, I would like to get more involved in regional leadership, because I suppose for lots of people, regional feels much more accessible than national. Yeah. And I'm thinking about, you know, what I might want to do around education or supporting peers or complaints or something more widely. Have you got any other, you've given lots of hints and tips, but any advice about people to for people to start in the right direction?
I'd probably go back to what I said before, just say yes. And I really don't think there's, you know, there's a right or a wrong way. So for example, medical school teaching, that's a really good, you know, starting point. If you want to go into education, or even if you don't want to go into education long term, but that's a nice stepping stone that could then lead to other sort of leadership roles within the university or within education, you know, VTS things. If you want to do a session at VTS of something in your, you know, that really lights you up, just get in touch with their team. I'm sure they'd love to have you. You know, if there is a specialty that you know about, I think it's just being really aware that there's loads out there that you could do. And it doesn't matter whether you've just started in your career or whether you're coming to the end of your career. There's just millions of stuff that you can do. It's just a case of what you can do at that moment for you, if that makes sense, and how much time you have to put to whatever it is that you know you want to do, and just start. And if you don't like that role, say, you know, the medical school role isn't quite what, you know, you thought it was, whatever, then you can step down and do something else. You know, nothing is set in stone, and sometimes the things that don't quite work out for us as well as we think it might are actually our best learning. And they're fabulous for when you want to talk in an interview about, you know, what didn't go quite so well, you know, this happened and that happened, but actually this is what I've learned. Just do it. Whatever it is, just do it. When that email comes through, just do it is probably what I'd like to say to everyone.
Yeah, what a nice note to end on there around, paying attention to your emails and just say yes. I suppose just a quick question, again, it might be a silly one, but if there are, you know, obviously you had an email that landed in your inbox with a job opportunity, is there somewhere to look for NHS England type opportunity or job opportunities?
Yeah, they are for the most part, and I think always, I hope I'm correct in saying that, on NHS jobs. So if you want anything along those lines, that's where you'll find it. So that's where I would signpost you. But I'd say get your experience, get some experience under your belt first, and then by all means apply.
So that's been really insightful, actually. I wasn't sure. I have to say, I was one of those people who wasn't sure what the regional teams necessarily did. And I hadn't heard about the clinical reviews and how they'd worked. But I'm sure lots of people are sat there thinking, oh, that's really interesting. I wonder whether I could get involved in something like that down the line. We're asking people to end on their highlight or best moment that they've had in their extra role.
My best times in my role is basically when I get to meet up with all my other clinical advisors and my team and my clinical reviewers team, because we all work and that's probably something I didn't say before, sorry, but we all work remotely. We don't tend to have that many opportunities in the year to get together, and so when we do, it's lovely, it's brilliant. And in fact, I've got one coming up on Friday, so I'm really, really looking forward to seeing all my colleagues and friends, and that's the best bit. But also, you know, doing a clinical review and feeling actually I was fair to the doctor, I was fair to the patient, so it's a job well done kind of thing, the satisfaction from doing that.
Thank you very much for giving up your time this afternoon. I think you've triggered a lot of thoughts with a lot of people, I would imagine, because it's, again, one of those jobs that I'm not sure has much airtime, but is so important and has such wonderfully inspirational people doing it. So thank you very much, Maria.
Thank you.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.